Hello, welcome everybody to episode 91 of the No Normal Show for Thursday, February 4, 2021, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers and communicators can navigate what we call the no normal. I am Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. Joined as always by Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Chase, hello.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you as always.
Good to see you, sir. Also excited that Ryan is here with us. Ryan Donahue, who is a thought leader in the realm of healthcare consumerism. Ryan's mission is to inspire and persuade hospital and health system leaders to embrace and engage the healthcare consumer. Over the past decade, Ryan has conducted extensive research on the effects of consumerism on the U.S. healthcare industry. He is currently the Corporate Director of Program Development with NRC Health, the largest surveyor of healthcare consumers in the U.S. Through his research and subsequent findings, Ryan has authored several publications on the topics of healthcare consumerism, brand strategy, and effective marketing tactics, including his latest book, which I happen to have right here, Patient No Longer, Why Healthcare Must Deliver the Care Experience That Consumers Want and Expect. Ryan is a longtime friend and colleague. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, so glad you're here. We're going to dive in on consumerism, on your book, on who knows what with you and I. We go long. I mean, how long have we known each other? Do you know?
A dozen years or more.
You don't have like a plaque on the wall designating the...
It's like an employee milestone. Yeah, I've known Chris for 10 years. I've at least got my 10 year. I think I'm working on my 15.
It's been a long time. So really glad that we've got you on, and I'm sure we'll have you back too at some point. So just some housekeeping notes before we dive in with Ryan. If you're new to the show on this podcast, we share industry trends, research, stories from folks like Ryan from within the industry or from without, anything that will help all of you health system marketers and communicators navigate the no normal successfully. You want to know more about what we mean by that? You want to know some principles of the no normal? Check out a blog post we wrote in 2020 that Chase will share in the chat function of Zoom. All right, let's dive in. Let's just dive right in. Let's talk about your book. How did it come about? It's co-authored with somebody who has one of my most favorite quotes that we throw around all the time, Stephen Klasko. Why don't you just talk a little bit about the book, his background, and we'll dive into the content, Ryan.
So yeah, the book sort of happened in two parts. The first was doing a lot of research on figuring out patient-centered care. We have heard about this so much in healthcare, right? That's like a phrase that we've heard so much, we don't even listen to it anymore. And so we had dug in and done a lot of research on the NRC Health legacy. A man named Harvey Picker, who was the first to coin the phrase, who did a ton of work on this. He's long passed, but back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, he said, hey, we're moving further away from the patient. He actually said we provide the best patient-centered care during World War II, where technologically there was only so much we could do to save the patient or to lose the patient. If we realized that, we focused on them as a person, got to know them as a human being. So I was fascinated by that. That culminated in a book from a quarter century ago called Through the Patient's Eyes, which was sort of the kickstart to the modern patient-centered care movement. A dozen years later, we had HCAHPS, and now we are where we are. So the big question at that point was, what do we have to show for all of those conversations, all those dashboards, all those executive incentive plans on patient-centered care? And that's where the second phase of the book started. Let's add to this legacy. So we look at Through the Patient's Eyes as sort of the ancestor to Patient No Longer, where we're asking current questions around, is just being great at the patient experience enough? What does the data tell us? How much do we have to zoom out and look at the entire consumer point of view, the entire journey of care, which is never just one episode? And it was a really fun, interesting journey. Now, by myself, I haven't written a book. I'm not like Chris Bevelo. So I had to do a little bit of a recruiting job and happened to be at a conference, the Governance Institute, which is a subsidiary of NRC Health. And Dr. Steve Klasko of Jefferson Health was putting on a clinic. And he was telling it like it is. He had just written a book called We Can Fix Healthcare. It was a hopeful message. It wasn't cynical. And so I approached him and said, let's work together. And we hammered out a plan and we wrote a book. And now it's out. So it's been an incredible, the book itself has sort of been like a journey, but it really chronicles this journey of patient-centered care to consumerism to where do we go next? And that's the fun part.
Well, I'm trying to remember the quote from Dr. Klasko, and you probably know it. it's a longer quote, but he talks about, you know, this is our Amazon moment. And he was referring to really what was happening with COVID-19 being a forcing function for dramatic change that we've talked about, patient-centered, you know, and otherwise. And it just, the quote was, to your point, like he tells it like it is. I found it here. Let's see if I can read it. He says, this is healthcare's Amazon moment. If you think you're a provider, or if you're a provider and think you're going back to your business model solely being based on hospital revenue and not relevant to people who want care at home, I think you will be out of business. And he goes on, but he just, like you said, like, there it is, right? He's just saying, there's no going back.
He's very direct.
He is very direct, which is cool. You sent this book to me, and you know, like all interviewers of authors, I have not had a chance to reach, but it's right here. So outline a little more specifically what's in it, and then let's dive in on some of the points of content.
Well, listen, you took it out of the package, and that's the first step. So I appreciate that, Chris. It was so interesting. You know, one, it's interesting to be writing a book and doing the research on this, digging back into the picker work, trying to understand what do we have to show for HCAHPS, which, spoiler alert, not a whole lot. And we did years of research. The actual writing process after that came together pretty quick, only about a year. I would not recommend releasing a book during the pandemic. I think Dr. Klasko would agree. But there's a foreword that we put right before it hit the printing presses. And he talks exactly about that point that you made that, listen, the future got here fast. And we both know, all of us know, that healthcare inches forward. The last physical conference I was at was a Governance Institute conference last February in Florida, the last time I've been in warm weather. I'm calling from the Midwest. And I did a telemedicine session, and I had folded arms. I had doctors saying, no, I want to see the patient in person. State lines, regulations, they were just looking for a reason to say no. And I think one of the few upsides of the terribleness that we've gone through in the last year has been there's been a lot of change that's been forced upon an industry that was really good at avoiding change. So I think this book, in a lot of ways, is really relevant as we emerge from this. The organizations that took the consumer seriously, that said, we want to build a journey. It's not just an episode. There's a pre-experience. There's a post-experience. You have to put that all together with the patient experience, and they affect all three together. That has been the power of emerging from this, saying, listen, once someone gets a vaccination, what's next? And are we going to go back to our old ways, or are we actually going to use this as an opportunity to say, wow, let's build some trust and some engagement and do some new things, since, you know, life's never going to be the same anyway.
Yeah, the last part of what you said is, I think, because the vaccine chaos now has hit us, you know, we're still first and foremost with COVID-19. And at some point we're going to be moving out, though we've been talking about this on the show recently, Ryan. We have been on the mindset that, hey, spring, summer, looking good, vaccines, right? Warmer weather. And then, you know, now there's another narrative, and there's a really powerful yet super depressing Axios article that talks about, there's a whole nother part to this because of the variants that are out there, the COVID-19 variants, the South African variant, the Brazilian variant, whatever. And there's a guy from University of Minnesota, an epidemiologist, who said, this is a category 5. It's going to get so bad. It's going to be worse than anything we've experienced yet. And so we've hearing both of those in the Axios article, which, Chase, if you can find it, actually says both those narratives can be true.
Sure.
And so it's in one way, I think this buys us some time. I guess what I was trying to get at was the virtual care and your idea of, like, are we going to go back to where we were, right? We may not be in a place where we can go back yet, I guess, is my super long-winded point. But one of the fears that we have is you're going to go back to a conference like you just described this fall, a year from now, and those docs are going to be back to this. Right. So that's just one example.
Yeah.
Our premise is, sorry, Pandora's box is open. The cow's out of the barn. You named the metaphor. It's true. Like, we're not going back from virtual care. The consumers just won't let us, will they?
No, they won't. They won't. And so NRC Health has Market Insights, large consumer study. I know we've worked together on that, Chris. And so we can pop into different markets, whether we have a client or not, and look at that information on an aggregate level. A lot of what I do is look at it across the country. What's the portrait of the American consumer in healthcare? And I will tell you, subset out the people who were forced into a virtual experience last year because the physical experience wasn't available. These are people that would have came in. These were people 65 plus who would normally come in, who were terrified of going, let alone the hospital, near their doctor. And so they were doing virtual experiences. You'd think this is a group that is, you know, not having a good time. They hate the fact that they're doing this experience. And yet 74% were satisfied with that virtual experience that they were thrust into. Some of the comments that we see, you know, I had a couple of questions. They were on screen. They answered them quickly. They filled my script remotely. I was able to drive through and get it. Normally when I sit down with that doc, they're staring at the screen, they're doing the data entry. In a virtual experience, I was the screen and my doctor made eye contact with me for the first time in a decade. And so there was these surprises. And also I think their expectations were incredibly low, right? Yeah. I got to do a virtual experience. This is going to be terrible. So it's maybe like when you go into a McDonald's with kids and you're expecting it to be terrible and you actually have fun, right? You're like, wow. And so people really, I think, for the most part, enjoyed it. We don't see those levels of satisfaction in physical experiences anywhere. So you've got consumers now saying, that wasn't so bad. I have the experience. I know how it works. That was half the battle before. In the future, maybe I don't want to fight traffic. Maybe I don't want to take off work in the afternoon. Maybe I want to stay on my couch. And this is a healthcare experience to me. And if one provider tells me no, maybe there's another provider that will tell me yes.
Yeah. And I've told this story before, but I'm that person, right? So I used virtual care before for like strep throat or something, but never with my provider because it wasn't available, right?
Right.
Forced to use it for some stuff this summer. And the first time, and after I did it, I was like, why in the world would I ever go into a physician's office again for this kind of thing, for consult, which is 75% of why I see doctors, right?
Right.
The next session that they wanted to have with me was all like, you got to come in, blah, blah, blah. And I said, whoa, why can't I do this remotely? And they're like, oh, let me check. And they had to go through a bunch of stuff to check. Meantime, I'm like, if you're not ready, maybe somebody else is, because I was looking at a procedure and I went out and I started researching somebody else. Turned out they weren't ready either. My provider came back and said, sure, we can do this virtual. So I stuck with them. But it took that to get me to look outside a provider that I've used for 20 years. So I don't think I'm alone in that. To your point, no drive, no waiting room. Anything I'm waiting for, I can do whatever I want to right here at home. Way cleaner. Why in the world would you go
back? There's a huge, for me, you know, we can look at the numbers and I can spout off percentages, you know, I can, but there's a philosophy to that that jumps out at me, that when you come to my home, you're on my turf now. And that feels really different from the way healthcare used to be. We had an elderly consumer who had a virtual care visit and, you know, was comfortable with it because she FaceTimes her grandchildren, first of all. So that's something new, right? 10 years ago, she'd have been, I'm going to the hospital. And she had a virtual care event that she was satisfied with. And she used a phrase that I love. She said, this is a return of the house call. And we've heard that over time of older consumers, not just young consumers who absolutely expect it, but older consumers who we assume they have their pattern. Heck, maybe they even have an adult child who drives them to their appointments, right? They got a whole system set up. Even some of them are doing virtual care and preferring it. And they remember the times long ago where doctors would come to you, where home health wasn't a new trend. It was the way healthcare was. And then we got really busy and we built our towers and, you know, healthcare made it really convenient for the doctors and administrators to get around and really inconvenient for everyone else. So I think we're starting to see that get deconstructed ever so little. And that is music to the ears of most healthcare consumers.
Yeah. And let's broaden it out here a second. Some of the research we've done, we've heard from physicians that they actually like the same dynamic you're talking about. I actually get to see my patients in their environment. Which adds a dimension that I wasn't getting before when they're in the office. So not all physicians obviously see it that way, but the key, I think, is to keep the key to keeping this where it needs to be is not the consumers. It's not the technology. It's ourselves. It's our physicians, right? Broaden this out. What do you guys hit on, or what do you think is important for people to kind of get out of the book in terms of consumerism writ large?
So the thing we like about how we constructed the book was we didn't just start out with, hey, consumerism is important. We tried to build some context. So first couple chapters are sort of a really quick history of patient-centered care. understanding that the consumer was at the center of that. We need to know people before they come in. We need to engage with them on a human level when they're here. And we need to not forget about them when they leave, right? That's the heart of trust and loyalty and getting people back and all the things that every other industry has seemingly done, but not healthcare. So we set the table with that. I think that appeals to people interested in consumerism, but it also appeals to people who are deep in the patient experience. And then we go through the consumerism piece, and inspired by the Joe Public work you've done, Chris, and the work you've done on consumerism and branding, but we talk about how you have to work, you have to get off campus, you have to spread your brand to the consumer. Do not wait for them to come in. That doesn't work. There's frustration, confusion, dissatisfaction when you wait for the consumer to come to you. You have to go out and engage them first. The last piece is just the hurdles you might run into. That's where a lot of Dr. Klasko talks about changing from the inside out, knowing that the organization really has to do things differently. One little piece that I think is really good towards the resolution of the book is this idea that we've forgotten that healthcare was a calling and that it's a blessing to work in healthcare. It's sort of just become another industry and another job for a lot of people. That is incredibly timely now when a lot of people have, through just terrible times and challenges, recaptured that. And I think we've led a new movement. I think 10, 15 years from now, you'll see people joining healthcare because they remember the Healthcare Heroes movement. So the book kind of goes along a path. It puts the consumer in the middle, but it covers a lot of what has to happen inside and outside of the organization.
Yeah, I love that. The idea that you know, the experience is not just in the patient room or in the hospital, and that you've got to think about it before and after. One of the things that, you know, you and I and many others have been pushing for is that even the semantics and the terminology matters, right? It's a, to us, we should say it's the consumer experience, because that assumes that they may not be your patient yet, but it's important that they have the right experience with you even before that. And we can even tell sometimes, right? Like by the title that the person has, the top person in the health system has, if it's chief patient experience officer or VP of patient experience, the first reaction I have is, okay, they're limited in how they're looking at this because the title alone is focused on the patient. And we know that that's important and we know that's like the heart of everything. But if you're not thinking about it beyond that, and it's not always safe to assume that they're not, but it's pretty safe if they've got that title, then they're really missing, they're missing so much that happens before and after.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked about that a lot, the pre-experience. And I think, you know, in a lot of your work, Chris, you've talked about how, listen, there's so many people that don't have a physical healthcare experience of any importance. That's a good thing that we're not spending a lot of our lives inside a hospital for most people, but there's so much that happens out there in your life where you're forming opinions and you're shaping your own perceptions and you're thinking about where you might go for care. And if we just assume that people are totally dialed in at that point, we're kidding ourselves. And so I think that's a lot of power of the book. You know, you'd mentioned words matter, and I go through, you know, all these spreadsheets of data, but there's little metrics that pop out to me, and maybe you can commiserate on this. I came to healthcare almost 15 years ago. I had done work before that for Cartoon Network. You didn't get out of a meeting at Turner without hearing the word brand at least 100 times. I came to healthcare, and I don't even think you'd written your first book yet, and I didn't hear brand at all. And when I said brand, you know, people looked at me like a third arm had popped out of my back. And I said consumer, and they said, just global, replace that with patient. And I heard that all the time. Every request I got, even 10, 8 years ago, I don't hear that anymore. I consider that a success story, that you can freely use the word consumer and it's not an expletive. I think people have come around to the idea that, yes, you're right. It's not just patient experience. We have to take the blinders off. You could argue maybe knowing is only half the battle here, but I do think it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and we've joked, like, you know, I think I've referenced brand as like the Lord Voldemort of marketing strategies, right? The strategy that shall not be named, because we would encounter clients who would say, yes, we need this. We need a brand position. We need to do branding right, but we can't call it that. So we're going to have to call it positioning or strategy or whatever. Right. Mostly that's gone. I would say there's like maybe some nooks and crannies of that still remaining. Yeah. And I'm trying to think last time where somebody kind of stood up and said, don't use the word consumer, they're patients, and people get really rattled. And of course they're patients. And we need to think about it when they're patients. That's a really important word. And you do need to think about folks differently when they are patients. But if that's all you're doing, then you're missing the boat in all of this in so many ways. So yeah, it is a lot better. It's good to kind of go back and look and say, wow, things have changed. They've changed. We still have ways to go, but what else do you want to talk about from the book? Is there anything else you want to hit that you think is really important? And everybody should go out and buy it, Patient No Longer, which I see what you did there. I love that. I assume that was intended.
It was intended. We had a lot of test runs on titles, as you know. We thought about through the consumer's eyes because it was a good play on words from through the patient's eyes. By the way, if anyone listening or viewing has read Through the Patient's Eyes, it is a long book. It's not an airplane read, but the new book, Patient No Longer, encapsulates it well in that front end and then gets into a very easy airplane read. I know we're not really on airplanes much, but I think you could read it in an afternoon. So I just want to tell you that some books are readable, some aren't. I think ours is. The only thing that I will add on it is just, we're really excited for it to be sort of a living document. We are doing workshops. We're just starting to get up to speed on that, really. The book's been out for a few months, but you know, the world's been standing still. So I'm excited to go in and do workshops and have people sort of imbue their own perspective on this, going in, as you know, with no PowerPoint and saying, let's talk about the patient experience and let's widen out our view and see what else comes into that frame and say, is there things from this that we can get traction on? You know, I'll just give you one example. In sitting in a workshop with Providence Health, it dawned on us as we talked about confusion that they'd done a bunch of journey mapping. Lots of organizations had, working with Baylor on this and a few others. And all of the journey mapping was around their experiences. We offer this, we offer a telemedicine appointment, or we offer an in-person consultation, or we offer an inpatient surgery. And we realized that so much of the consumer journey happens in between those spaces. You know, if I'm a cancer patient, the emotion I feel between appointments, it's like dark matter in the universe. I mean, that could be like 99% of how I feel. And so there's just these enlightening things that come out of these workshops that honestly aren't always in the book, but it sort of feels like the book is living on and changing and growing. And so that's the part that I'm excited about in the near term.
Yeah, we've been doing journey mapping too. And I think like we've moved beyond, you know, anytime I see a journey map that's linear, I just go, yeah, that is whoever came up with that, that is not how this works, right? This is dating me a lot, but a journey map looks like what Family Circus used to look like when Billy went on his little dotted line journey. It's like his mom said, it's time for lunch. And it took him a half hour to come in from outside because he was like, you know, like playing with the ball and then jumping on the couch. And our journey maps now look like a ball of twine because that's what it is. It is. And that ball of twine could be in a week or that ball of twine could represent a year, depending on what the journey is and what they're after. Chris, it is not linear.
It's not linear. Amen to that. And we talk about this in the book. We've had people kind of draw out and visualize a past experience. So this isn't ideal. Maybe ideally consumers would draw the straight line, you know, like the very wishful executives are doing, and it's never that. But we've had consumers reflect back when they're saying their most common emotion was confusion. Certainly wasn't satisfaction. They're not given 10 out of 10s on HCAPs, right? But we said, what did the journey look like? Well, I went here and I was referred there and I went online and I figured this out and I self-diagnosed and I went back and they were drawing the ball of twine. In fact, when we had them use analogies, different setups, they chose a maze more often than not. They said, I was stuck in the middle of a maze, never wanted to be there, didn't know which way to turn, wanted to get out. Like, I just want to get back to being me before I had this healthcare experience. How do I get out? Which we always think of as an opportunity. Who designed the maze? And if hospitals and health systems are willing, they should be going in and taking the hand of that consumer and saying, we will help you along this journey. And by the way, we're going to start breaking down some of the walls. I think that's a responsibility that providers have. And it's something that consumers desperately want.
Yeah. And it's so self-serving for you or for I, given the companies we work for, to say, look, it matters if you understand this business, but it matters if you understand this business. And you see it when you have people come from outside. And there is a consultancy that I will not name. It's one of the giant ones. And I have seen their customer journey, like it's like a four-step process. And I've seen it brought in and applied to our world. And it's awareness, trial, use, retention. And I just go, where is that happening in this space? It is not. And unfortunately, that gets in front of the CEO. And the CEO is like, see, marketer, It's all on you, dude. Like, just make them aware, tell our story, we're a hidden gem, and then they'll try us, and then we'll, you know, they'll be a patient, and then we'll retain them, right?
And the nice thing is you're not implicating any particularly large consulting firm, because they all use the exact same model, and they all came from like their consumer package goods meeting this morning. We're like, healthcare, you know what? Toss in the circle. Let's use the circle, Dave. And so they put it in, and you're right. The CEO is looking for the easiest way out. And they're saying, see, you missed a spot. We just do this four part, you know, and the crazy thing is like awareness alone, as you know, could be like a decade of someone's life, right? They could be bouncing all around on what they're aware of and not aware of in their healthcare choices with no clue what to do when they sense an actual issue.
Right. Even that the second step is trial, right? Like if you're Coca-Cola, hey, throw an ad up there. Maybe somebody takes a Coke, is like, great, I'm going to go buy a 12 pack. That can all happen in 5 minutes, right?
Right.
What is the trial for surgery? What does that even look like, right? I might need surgery. I think I'm going to go in and I'm going to do a trial surgery on my hip. And if that goes well, I'll go ahead and anyway, we digress.
I had a double bypass and, you know, it was so good. I'm going to get the triple. I'm going to go back in for the triple. This is great. I need more healthcare.
Plus they've offered me a discount on the triple. So it's fantastic. All right. So let's go back to virtual, because I know that's something that you guys focus on a lot. We actually have a question that goes back to the statistic you threw out, and I think I've got a viewpoint on it, but I'm going to throw it at you first.
Okay.
So the question was related to the high level of satisfaction. I believe this is what it related to. The high level of satisfaction that you found in your survey for people that were trying virtual care for the first time. And maybe there was a age group used there. The question was, do you think that those figures are different when thinking about tertiary care, such as cancer? So you could just blow that out to say, do you think people will be as comfortable with or happy with virtual care once we get into more significant levels of acuity, whether that's specialty, whether it's surgical, whether it's tertiary?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's something that we're trying to ponder and trying to predict, because we have this throng of people over the last 10, 11 months who have had these virtual care events largely because there's been no substitute. So of course, that's not how things are going to look post-COVID. There are going to be some people who are going to return. We did ask those people if they would go back to physical events, and a little more than half said they would easily go back to their physical routine. So we know a decent amount of those people will go back. Doesn't mean they won't have virtual care as part of their overall healthcare plan in the future. And I'd have to think that that will continue to be more of a mainstay every year. But I will say this, that was 18 plus. So it was a wide swath of consumers across the country. It was 74%. We're satisfied. Those individuals will continue to look at easy things. You know, you talked about your own example, strep throat and the like. They will look at those sort of things as virtual first. If they have something more serious, something higher on the acuity chain, yes, they'll physically go in for those. But you have to remember, as healthcare systems widen out their services and try to be competing on all these platforms, a lot of this is going to be lower acuity interactions, and that's going to lead to early brand experiences, and whether those are good or bad is going to determine if someone would go in for something more serious. So you're right. It's there's a difference there, and there's a point where if I'm battling cancer, I'm not on my couch on my phone. I get that. But if I've had positive experiences with things that were less serious, when I do have cancer that I'm fighting, I may stick with that provider because I had good past experiences.
Yeah, we've recommended to a couple of clients that, look, you really need to think about this. If you were designing your health system from scratch today, if you were smart, it would be virtual first everywhere, physical as the next step or an option, not the way it is today, right? And of course, there's always things that you have to do in person, scans, physical checks, and there's also consults that are appropriate to do in person. The result of a mammogram that's not good. Like, you want to do that in person, right? But I think the way to think about it is, you could still, even in a cancer scenario, even in a significant heart scenario, have a virtual experience first. So imagine somebody is diagnosed with lung cancer, right? They just got back some kind of image, and they've been told that, and now they need to see a specialist for that, for whatever reason, however this works, right? You can still have the first meeting be a virtual meeting, and it's with a nurse practitioner. And it's like, Ryan, look, you know, this is not the best diagnosis, but here's what we're going to do. Your next meeting in person is with Dr. Bevelo. He's going to run through the scenarios. Today, what I want to do is kind of explain to you the process. It's an additive experience. It's probably not even there now, but helps me feel more comfortable, actually can cut some of the paperwork and the bureaucracy that may need to happen when I go in to see the doctor, take care of that. It's a way to ease people in. There can be follow-ups that are virtual. So if today this, any scenario was 3 in-person visits, maybe that becomes 5 or 6 total, and you're putting in virtual in a way that's not costing you an arm and a leg financially, doesn't have to be reimbursable, but helps that experience and helps actually the patient outcome as well clinically.
And that blended approach is something that we know consumers want, because they live most of their lives now as a hybrid of virtual and physical, and healthcare is still the outlier, except we've been forced into this virtual care. But yeah, I really think you hit on some really important points. A lot of this, though, comes back to the reason our hospital's built the wrong way now, as if we would have started it from day one, is that we cling like a rat to a large piece of cheese. We cling to the way that we originally set up the physical plant. That is the origin. That is the history of healthcare. It was convenient. It made sense to us. And we made a lot of money doing it. And so as we think about adding things, I go back to an example that was in one of your Joe Public books, where you talked about the snake that eats its tail, where digital, when people just consider it on an island, it's its own thing. And you've sat in board meetings with really smart people who say, well, these are our 5 pillars. We're thinking about adding a 6th on digital. And it's like, what does that mean? Because of your 5 pillars, all of those, you know, digital cuts across. It's not a pillar. It's a common thread that's woven throughout. We still think about it in the sense of what's comfortable to us and then digital. And I think in a way, we've got to try to reset our thinking a little bit to blend the two. Because in reality, digital helps physical. It doesn't just replace it. You look at some of the things happening with virtual waiting rooms, where I can see that my doctor, I'm going in for a physical appointment, traditional healthcare, but my doc is an hour and a half behind. I don't have to leave work now. I don't have to drop my kid off early. I can wait and go in and be seen and only have to wait 15 minutes. That's a beautiful blend of virtual and physical, and the left hand helps the right hand.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So what else? Anything else from the book you want to hit? We've got one more talker on here, which is vaccines, which scares the heck out of me at our time because, oh my gosh, we could talk about so much. How about this? Is there anything in terms of vaccine research that you've done that surprised you or that you think would be surprising for the audience that you'd want to share? I'm putting you on the spot. Sorry, you might not have prepared for that, but no, I know that you're just like you can just pull numbers. That's who you are.
My brain is just a Microsoft PowerPoint file, and I hope it never gets corrupted.
It's an Excel file, not a PowerPoint file.
Sorry. Yes. I know. But don't you feel like you live your life in PowerPoint too as a presenter? So the thing about vaccines, I was surprised when I saw NRC's health numbers because I had read a lot of bad news, you know, and some people are already citing this across the industry of, you know, there's a Gallup poll saying a third of people aren't going to get it. And there's a lot of people that feel forced into it and a lot of negativity around it. That does not match the latest numbers that we've done nationally with consumers. We have it as low as 14% who say, I'm not getting the vaccine.
Wow.
And that's held pretty steady. We ask there's a part of our question that we ask that's different than a lot of others. We try to capture the amount of people saying, you know, I'm not comfortable right now. I'm going to wait and see. To me, that is an incredibly reasonable way to feel about this. I'm going to wait and see. And those have grown. That's 25% was the latest numbers from about a month ago that we captured. 25% of people saying, I'll wait and see. 38% saying, when it's available, I'm going to get it. So you've got almost 4 in 10 consumers saying, when that thing's available, I'm coming in first day getting it. You got another 1/4 of people saying, you know what, I'm going to wait. But guess what? If my neighbor gets it and they're not violently ill and a few weeks have gone by and I'd like to get back to some semblance of normal, or if that exists, I'm probably going to get it. So I think because more people have moved towards the green on that, I do think that we're going to see the vast majority of Americans get the vaccine. I don't worry about that as much as maybe some people who are reading a lot of the news about it.
Yeah, that's good. It's good to hear. And I think that's true too. You always just have to be so careful. You and I have been around on this when you're asking people a survey question, and it's particularly when you don't do it in the right way, you're not providing the kind of context you're talking about. And, you know, are you comfortable getting the vaccine? No. 40% of the people are not comfortable getting it. Well, yeah, it's probably like 80%. Like nobody's Nobody wants to do this, but if it comes down to, are you going to get it or not? Are you going to get it if it helps your family? Are you going to get it if your neighbor gets it? Are you going to get it after you've seen it for 2 months of other people getting it? Most people, to your point, are going to be like, yeah. So it's reasonable to be uncomfortable with it, but it's so hard to pull out of just a survey sometimes, the nuance. You just have to ask questions the right way.
You're right. And you're a good, Chris has many a times been a great editor on some of my questions. I'll even text you, you know, I feel like it's in the middle of the night saying, hey, is this the right question? What about the scale? You know, which you're usually up and thinking about that too. I don't know. So you have to design your research around how people act and how they think and feel. And that's always a challenge. But I will just say this to the listeners and viewers, if you're using a lot of surveys or someone's pushing surveys on you that don't allow for neutrality, that you're not sure or you're kind of in the middle on something, that's a red flag. When people get pushed into polarity, you know, it gets into a lot of the other things that are dividing our country. Will you get it or won't? You know, a lot of people are in the gray, and that's fine. It's okay to be that. And I think, again, on something like this, it'll shift. You'll reach a critical mass of people who are vaccinated. And honestly, we'll see high demand and we'll see most people vaccinated. But you're right. There's other ways to ask it that can seem sensational and divide people and create a lot of angst. And we know there's a lot of companies out there that like to create angst because it's part of their business model, because they can solve your problem now.
Yes, this is true. This is true. We just had a guest appearance on the show.
You did.
Who was that, Chase? Was that your daughter?
It was.
I don't know if you saw it, Ryan, but his daughter popped in and Chase did one of these. He like shifted over to like, it was pretty good. Very subtle. Very good. All right.
It was quick. That was good.
It was very good. Well, look, we can keep going on and on. Where can people find this?
So it's actually printed through ACHE, American College of Healthcare Executives. Nice. They have a printing arm, the Healthcare Administration Press, or HAP. The easiest way to find it, though, is just to Google Patient No Longer and either Donahue or Clasco, or you can throw in both last names of both authors, and it'll pop up. It's on Amazon. If you can purchase it directly from ACHE, that would be good. Book authors, as I'm finding out, have found that there's a reason why Amazon makes so much money. Yes. So they might skim a little bit off the top. So if you could go to the HAP website that's through ACHE, that would be best. If someone here knows me or I've met you or Chris knows, I'll send this book to strangers. So you can also contact me. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, and you can request a book, and I'm glad to send one to you. I think it's a really exciting, fun thing. I've sent one to all of my family members. They didn't really request it, but I felt I should anyway. So it's out there.
You want Chase to post your home address and personal phone number in the chat? You can get that out there too.
Someone can come shovel my sidewalk. That's just fine. It's easy to find me, and it's easy to find the book. Just Donahue, Patient No Longer. You'll find it. Like I said, it's an easy read. It even has a COVID forward, so it doesn't feel dated. And we're excited to see where this thing goes.
Well, very cool. I do look forward to reading it because it is, you know, part of my passion about experience and everything we're trying to do. So
you're even
and it's yours,
it.
Man.
You're quoted.
I'm quoted in there?
Yeah. There's quote. It's actually from your first Joe Public book, which I know was 60 years ago, but
it's a decade old, man. It's 10 years old.
Is it 10 years?
Old.
Oh my gosh. I was kidding. Yeah, wow. 10 years old. Time. Yeah. No, we quote you because you had some really good early, you know, they seemed so controversial at the time. Some of the things you would say about you have to reach consumers or they don't care. And healthcare just assumes they do, and that's wrong. And so many of those things now are second nature, and I credit you for a lot of that work. But we did quote you in the book for some perspective.
Well, excellent. I look forward to my royalties. I'll give you my personal phone number. You can forward this to. Thanks so much. Thanks for being on the show, dude. We'll have you back for sure.
I would love to. Any topic.
Yeah. Well, it was great having you. As always, I know we would have a good time. Chase, thank you and your daughter for all of your support on the show.
Absolutely. Enjoyed the conversation as well.
If you have something you want us to cover on the No Normal Show, let us know. Post it in the chat before you hop off. If you're live, whether you're live or not, you can email us something at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. Remember to visit thinkrevivehealth.com/no-normal for a recording of the episode, or thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for all of our COVID stuff. including all of our information on the No Normal, and subscribe. And as always, until next week, thank you for joining us and good luck out there in the No Normal. Take care, everybody.